after a small hiatus due to circumstances beyond my control, we're back on Victims of Fun. So, hey, what's going on, everybody? It's been a while. Not that any of you probably missed me, because, you know, nobody ever does. Ha! Ha! This is Season 5, Episode 20, by the way, if anybody's keeping track, which I know you don't. So, hello. Welcome to Victims of Fun. I'm your host, El Stevo. You're listening to Victims of Fun on Spotify, iHeart, or half a dozen other podcast platforms graciously provided by Anchor.fm, the best podcasting software on the planet. You can go right to Anchor.fm, download it right to your phone, you can podcast on the fly. They'll even set you up with ads and sponsors so you can make some money, even though I'm not making anything. And you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can send me your ideas, your love, your hate, your Bitcoin address, and your seed key or whatever. yeah, that'd be great. And you can do all that, and you can become a supporter by clicking the support button, which, of course, nobody ever does. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch. But just typing in Victims of Fun. But honestly, I haven't really done anything on Twitch yet because I've realized that the camera on this MacBook Air, Apple is never known for their built-in web cameras on their laptops, and yeah, they're just not. It's good for Zoom or FaceTime, but as far as doing a halfway decent Twitch stream, it's not exactly, you know, I like going for quality, so I have to get a decent webcam to set it up. And, you know, I don't really like being on camera, but this might be another way for me to make money. So that's probably what I'm going to do. But it's been a while. I don't think I've been online since September 11th or somewhere around there. I mean, it's just some stuff was going on here, and we had a lot of rain, and I had some stuff I had to do around the house and a couple other things, and nothing bad. Everything good. And I'm like, okay, finally done. And I was going to do a podcast yesterday, but honestly, the football games were so good, especially Justin Tucker's 66-yard field goal. It was a brilliant NFL day. You know, I watch the Red Zone. That way I don't have to watch the two national anthems, which I didn't know we had now. But so, you know, Sundays are for football. So, and unless the games were... And then I was going to do it at night, but then the 49er-Packer game was epic. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to... I want to watch this. And next time you know, it was time for me to go to bed. And there you go. But hey, we're back, like usual. Episode 20, Season 5. And I hope everybody's doing good. A lot of stuff's been happening in the news. A lot of political stuff that I try to avoid, a lot of COVID-related crap, a lot of border-related crap. I mean, just a horrible timeline that we're living in. And every time you look in the news and everything you look at, it's just so depressing. But I have something that might lighten your day. You know, as people may know, living in Japan or everything, I kind of got into anime. Not crazy, like an otaku type of thing where, you know, I have anime all over my room. There were just certain shows I liked. I like One Punch Man because it's a whole parody on the overpowered superhero genre. I mean, the guy is... He's One Punch Man. And he's bald. He's like 28. And he's so insanely powerful that he can't be damaged, can't be hurt. He can destroy any monster with just one punch. And because he's so powerful, he's bored because he never gets a challenge. And he's so nonchalant that there's this hero organization of heroes that make money and protect people from monsters, and they have a ranking system, and most of them are petty, toxic people who only care about how popular they are. And he is, One Punch Man is more powerful than everybody in this organization put together. Like, literally, they could all attack him at the same time, and he wouldn't even know they were hitting him. But he never gets credit for any of his monster kills because he's just so nonchalant and in the background and so just doesn't care about, you know, that whole thing that, you know, he's one of the lower class ranked heroes when he could, you know, wreck the whole association. But it's a parody on the whole superhero thing because he's so insanely powerful that he becomes bored. There's nothing for him to do. And he concentrates mostly on sleeping, playing video games with another hero named King, who's a big-time otaku, is really into video games, and they play video games all day. And Saitama, the One Punch Man, is obsessed with shopping and, like, clipping coupons. So whenever there's a sale at his local market, he always runs down there to get the best deals on, like, vegetables, and he's big into bananas, and... But it's hysterical because it's, you know, if you ever watch any of the DC or Marvel Universe hero stuff, you know, you see how all that is. But this guy, it's just a parody because he could literally split the planet with his pinky and he's just completely bored. So, you know, I watch that. I like Azur Lane, and which is difficult to describe. It's kind of... Okay, so Azur Lane, take World War II ships, battleships, cruisers, whatnot, warships from the Second World War. Japan, Germany, America, Royal Navy, Italy, Russia, whatever. All the nations that had navies in World War II. Now, take the actual warships and turn them into what's called ship girls. And they're like 20-something-year-old. Females, but they are the warships. The warships turn into them, and they turn into the warships. I'm really just like not really describing it good, but that's basically the idea behind it. And it's about, and they never actually kill each other, but they're in constant struggle because you have the Japanese and the German navies on one side, which is the Crimson Axis, and then you have the Eagle Union, which is America, and the Royal Navy, which is Britain, on the other. And that's Azur Lane. And then you have the kind of like non-aligned background navies. Like they have a representation of the Vichy French and the Free French, the Italians, the Russians, the Chinese. You know, they're kind of lurking around the parameters. But they're the representation, and they're actual World War II warships. You know, they don't make up any of the names, and they get the history of the ships right. And it's just weird because a lot of the outfits the girls wear kind of are similar to the rigging of the ships they represent, and some of their personalities are kind of like the personalities that the ships had, or what the sailors claimed the ships had. So, like, I'll just give you a quick example. The USS San Diego, which was a cruiser, which was the second most decorated warship in the U.S. Navy in World War II, had a reputation of completely wiping out any aircraft that were over it. It was an anti-aircraft specialty. It would blow planes out of the sky. Nothing could ever touch it, no matter how many planes they threw at it. The USS San Diego, because of how good the gunners were and the guns on the ship, could blow anything out of the sky. Well, in the show, the USS San Diego is this red-haired girl, and she's very, very, very hyperactive. Because I guess because the idea of shooting down so many planes all coming at you at the same time makes you kind of jumpy. So in the show, she's extremely hyperactive and is always running at full speed with everything, like, limitless amounts of energy, and, you know, that's her, you know, whatever. You know, the Royal Navy ships are very quiet and very reserved. The American ships are kind of, like, boisterous. Like, the main American ship is, which is weird, is USS Enterprise. But it seems like, if you watch the show, the leader of the American fleet is the USS Cleveland, because whenever there's meetings for battles or strategy or anything, it's Cleveland that's always there to represent the Americans, which is weird because the USS Cleveland was just a normal Cleveland-class cruiser in World War II was never a flagship of anything, but her personality in the show, she's the de facto, I guess, overall leader of the fleet, when it actually should be Enterprise, but it's not, which is weird. They're called the Sakura Empire, which is the Sakura Empire, which is supposed to represent Japan. It's all the Japanese ships. They're very into ceremony and, you know, the whole Japanese culture thing. And Iron Blood, which is the German Navy, you know, they're your typical German Navy ships. Heavily armored, big guns, brooding, violent type of... It's a weird show. So, it's getting back to my point. So, I found an anime the other day, because, you know, the world is just such a horrible place right now, and everything that's going on, and, you know, you get stressed out. You get stressed out and everything, the whole world. And I'm always looking for something that kind of will look like will take me away to somewhere calm, and I found a, and this is good if you're a motorcyclist or you're a motorcycle enthusiast, I found an anime called Super Cub. And if you don't know, the Super Cub is like the most mass-produced vehicle ever in the history of the planet. That's counting automobiles, ships, they made more Super Cubs in a year than the Model T the whole time. I mean, it's just something like 200 million of them were made so far. And they're these little motorcycles, 50 to 125 cc. And they were called Super Cubs, and they still make them. I'm thinking about buying one, actually. And they're all over Japan. You go to Japan, you see these type of bikes everywhere, but the Super Cub was the big thing. And the Super Cub actually pulled Japan out of the post-war industrial disaster it was in, because it was the first thing they could make, because it was so easy and reliable to make, and nobody had cars. The car industry was just bombed. But they could still make the Super Cubs. So the Super Cubs were the vehicles right after World War II that got the whole Japanese economy running again, because that was the only thing they could build for mobility until the auto industry got back on its feet. And as a result, the Super Cub kind of saved the economy of Japan. And so anyway, so I found this little anime, and it's just such a heartwarming, sweet little show, and the name of the show is Super Cub, and it's about this Japanese girl who's a high school student. Her father died and her mother took off, so she's got no parents and no family. And in Japan, they have a system where if you have a high school student who has no parents and no family, and they're kind of judged to be at risk, not because they're criminals or anything, but they have nobody, the Japanese government will put them up in a small little apartment and pay them a monthly stipend as they go to high school. And, you know, it's just, they're living by themselves. I think they have to check in with somebody once a month, and they have to keep their grades up, and they can't get arrested or anything like that. But it's a way for them to continue going on in school, because really in Japan, they don't have the whole foster family thing over there. So this girl lives in this, you know, small one-room apartment. And she bicycles herself to her high school, which is, if I'm watching this show, it's like a mile or a couple miles from her apartment. And she's very closed and withdrawn. And she's got no friends, no family, keeps to herself when she's in school, doesn't talk to anybody, just does her grades and goes home. Really doesn't have a life and is very withdrawn. And she's getting tired riding the bike to school. And one day she sees another student on a scooter. And she decides, I'm going to go look at scooters and maybe I'll buy one. And she goes and looks at them, and the new scooters are too expensive for her. They're a couple hundred thousand yen. And she's at the little scooter shop, and, you know, the old man is helping her. And she said, well, I can't really afford any of these. And he says, well, wait a minute, I have something. And he brings out about a 1996 or 97. And remember, this anime is taking place today, so this is an older bike. So he brings out like a 90s era Honda Super Cub 50cc. And he says, this is for sale for 10,000 yen. 10,000 yen is 100 bucks. And she looks at him, she goes, why are you only selling this thing for 10,000 yen? And he said, because three people have died because of this motorcycle. They didn't get killed on the bike, like it didn't crash, it's just the three people who owned it previously had all died or disappeared or something. And the bike had a bad reputation of owners constantly dying and were taking off, and the bike always ended up back at the shop. So without hesitation, she says, I'll take it. She doesn't have a license. She goes to take her little test, gets her license. And the whole show is about her learning how to care for this bike, learning how to drive it, and the Super Cub opens up her world beyond going from the school to her apartment. And every time that she makes a realization that she's accomplished something with the bike, putting gas in it for the first time, changing the oil by herself, buying her first accessory for it, taking her first trip, every time that happens, the animation in the show gets a little bit brighter and more colorful, because it starts out kind of gray, but the more she accomplishes with herself, with her life, because of the Super Cub opening up the world to her, you can see the animation get a little bit brighter, a little bit more colorful, a little more detailed, because it's an indication of how her world is opening up. When she makes her first friend, it gets brighter. When they go on their first road trip, it gets brighter. When she changes the oil for the first time, it gets brighter. When she buys a windshield for it, it gets brighter. And the more, the farther she goes, the happier she gets, and the more the world opens up for her. And what amazed me about it is they don't skimp on the motorcycle technology. Like, they had input from the Honda Corporation. In everything you see her do with the bike, how to start it, how to stop it, how to ride it, how to change this, is all actually how you would really do it if you really had the bike yourself. And I read a review of the anime on a motorcycle website that's strictly like sport bikes and everything, and I guess the guy had seen the anime and was like, I have to write about this, and said that if you ever wanted to see the most realistic portrayal of what it's like to own and care for something like this, you have to watch this anime, because even the tools she uses, they've animated in the correct format, the correct hand gesture, everything in that she does with the bike is done exactly how it would be in real life. They use real sounds from a real bike in the anime for the engine sounds, the exhaust, and her best friend has a different form of the Cub. It's called a CT125. It's a trail bike. It's another bike like the Cub, but it's designed more for off-road stuff, and even that, it's the same thing. It's exactly set up the way it is in real life. But it's such a joy to watch, because in the beginning of the show, in the first episode, it's gray, dreary, she's doesn't really display any emotion. And by the end of episode, I think it's 10 or 11, which is the first season, she's open, she's made a second friend. She took a very long road trip of like 2 hours. She drove it in the snow. She spent the night at her friend's house. I mean, she's opened up to, she got a job being a courier. And it's beautiful to me because there's nothing bad in it. There's no political message. There's no negativity. There's no violence, no sexuality, no monsters, no aliens. It's just a girl with her little motorcycle that opens up her world. And it's such a, it's like taking a warm bath. It just overflows on you and just puts you in this calm, serene place. And I'm watching this, and I found myself just completely forgetting where I was and lost in this world. And it's, you know, I don't get that way with movies or anything else. It's just, you know, that I watch. But this thing took me away. And I found myself with the last episode of the first season, because they still have to make a second one, which they're going to. I found myself sad because I'm like, I really like this person. I like this show. I like this world. I like seeing what she's doing. And yeah, it's over. Now I got to wait, you know, a couple months for the second season to come out. But it's such a refreshing tonic for the soul to watch this show. And even if you don't watch Japanese anime, if you're looking for a TV show that will just put a smile on your face and make you feel good for a half hour, that is something that the entire family could watch, that if you're a motorcycle enthusiast is right up your alley, and this is something you really need to seek out. And it's, you can get it on Crunchyroll and they and all that, but it's also the episodes are on YouTube. Make sure you watch the subtitle. Don't watch a dub. I don't even know if there is a dub, but I never watch anime in dub because the dubbing is always horrible. Watch the subtitles. And it's something the whole family could watch because, and I have to make a point, the music in the show, there's a lot of silence in the show because the soundtrack is the world around her. The sound of the motorcycle, her breathing, the animals, the roadside noises. But when there is music, the only instrument is this piano. And it's a very soft piano accompaniment to what is going on the show. And it's just, it's beautiful. I found myself so drawn to it that, and you know, shows don't really affect me like that. But if you're looking for something that wants to put you in a good mood and, you know, you just want to forget the troubles of the world for a half hour, that you gotta, it's called Super Cub. Seek it out. Trust me. Just watch the first couple episodes, and it's got like a 9.5 rating on Internet Movie Database. Like, people are just in love with this show because it's so simple, so pure, so innocent, and just so heartwarming. That it's incredible. It's really, you really have to watch it because I'm so happy that I found it. Because it just, with everything going on in the world today, to see something like that that kind of just like washes it all away for a bit, it is rare. And I'm just very happy that I was able to find something like that, which to me is fantastic. So there you go. I also saw the new version of Dune. I don't know if you've been paying attention or not, but there's a new version of Dune by Denis Villeneuve, who did Arrival. And it's technically it's Dune Part 1, because it goes up to the part where House Atreides falls and Paul and his mother end up in the desert and join the Fremen. And that's the first half, that's the movie, that's where it ends. Because, you know, you can't film the whole thing in one shot. But it was actually very good. It's a beautiful movie. The soundtrack's incredible. The cinematography is off the rails. I mean, it's like Oscar caliber. And there's a, like, obviously being science fiction, there's a lot of CGI, but the outdoor stuff is all shot in the desert. Or wherever they were for when they were in Caladon, which I think it was Northern Ireland or Scotland, but you know, when they're on Arrakis, that's real desert. They're actually in the desert. I don't know what desert they're in. It looks like the Road Warrior Desert, which was the Gambia, because it just looked like that. But the movie's good. It was very, very truthful to the book, which everybody always said was impossible to film because of the subject matter and just how complicated it was. But it was a very good movie. You know, I watched it and I'm like, okay, this is really good. Wasn't a big fan of the David Lynch version from way back in the day, even though I like David Lynch, because it wasn't Dune. It was Dune in name only. It was a good science fiction movie, but it never should have been called Dune, because it was something completely different. But this was pretty on the ball. They took it very seriously, and the costume design and the cinematography and the music especially was just top notch. It was a very good movie. I also saw that Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and it was good. It was a good Marvel, it's a Marvel movie. And so I watched it, and it was good. It's one of those type of things that, it's all CGI and all action, really not too concerned with plot or believability, and they had a lot of plot holes, but it was surprisingly entertaining. It's good to actually see. I like martial arts. I'm a big Shaw Brothers fan. The Venom Mob and all that. And this was pretty good. This was like if the Shaw Brothers had an unlimited budget and top-of-the-notch special effects, they would have made something like this. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I'm very much looking forward to new Spider-Man. Very much looking forward to Venom. We'll see what happens, and if there's still a world. I mean, you got that tsunami that's supposed to go off in the Atlantic. There's a volcano in the Canaries or something, and they're saying if it explodes, there's going to be a 300-foot tsunami. It's going to hit the east coast of the United States doing 600 miles an hour. I'm in Florida. We're only like 30 feet above sea level, but where I live, the water wouldn't get this far inland. They said that it would get to Orlando, but it wouldn't be like a... Well, like they're saying, like the coast of like Daytona, Miami, and all that gone. Just destroyed completely. But by the time the water gets inland, it would kind of be like if Orlando just had like a really heavy rain flood type of thing. And it wouldn't reach to where I am because I'm closer to the West Coast. But, I mean, Boston, gone. New York, gone. All the coastal areas, gone. The West Coast of Africa, gone. The West Coast of Britain, gone. Brazil, gone. So I'm wondering, if this thing goes off, there might be some cheap real estate available in a couple months. Who knows? It just seems like the entire planet's falling apart. But I'm wondering if sometime in history, if there were people sitting around a campfire, or wherever, back in the Stone Age, thinking the same thing, that, oh God, everything's about to fall apart, and, the human race keeps going. But if you look at how long human beings have been around compared to the planet, it's a blink of an eye, man. I mean, we've only had like civilization, as far as like civilization goes, for like what, 20,000 years, maybe, if that. I mean, this is nothing. The dinosaurs were around for hundreds of millions of years, and if aliens came and knew the history of the planet, they would assume the dinosaurs were the most successful species that ever existed because of how long they were around. Not us. I mean, it's a blink of an eye. I kind of hope aliens come. I wouldn't mind getting off this planet. Get my own spaceship, zooming around the universe, That'd be kind of cool. Because, there's billions and billions of planets out there, and odds are there's some deserted planets got great beaches that nobody lives on that I would show up on it. My luck, there'd be giant, like, shark octopus monsters in the water, or, 30-foot spiders. But, there's got to be something out there, man. I mean, like I said, in Contact, it'd be a waste of space if there wasn't. And anybody who thinks that there's not stuff out there is an idiot, because mathematically it's impossible that we're alone. I mean, only a self-centered, narcissistic society like us would think that in all the universe it's just poor little humans, Hey, maybe there's a planet out there where there were anime, the anime planet, where life has evolved that it looks like an actual animated planet. You know, that's just how it looks. That'd be pretty cool. Or a planet of, like, walking, like, pizzas. Like, the life forms evolved into something that looks like pizza. And it walks around. Imagine you show up to the pizza planet, and you're like, ah. And, you know, like, oh, human, what do you like to have for dinner? And you go, you. That'd be pretty funny. See, I'd do that, and I'd start an intergalactic war, and then we'd be enslaved by the pizza people. Well, thank you for listening to this rambunctious episode of Victims of Fun. I hope you've enjoyed. And yeah, check out Super Cub. I think you'll enjoy it. And send me some feedback if you do watch the show at victimsoffun@mail.com. Remember, you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. Just type in Victims of Fun, and you'll see the blue microphone logo. And that's how you know it's me. And remember, you click that support button, become a supporter, send me your money because I need it. And I think that's about it this week. Nice and short and sweet. And I'm going to watch some Monday Night Football tonight and have a mojito and smoke a cigar. And, oh, God, who's playing? Oh, God, the Cowboys are playing tonight. Oh, maybe I'll just give myself a prostate exam. Ugh. Ugh. Anyway. All right. Well, you all have a wonderful day. And remember, the whole key to everything, you know, the key to everything is to love one another, because if you don't, you know, if you don't, you're an idiot, because we're all in this together, so y'all need to just, like, get with the program, all right? All right, well, see, there you go. Okay.